Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here Tuesday, January the 27th, 2026. 13 and a half minutes past the hour, and we want to thank legendary ABC newsman Sam Donaldson for joining us in hour number one to discuss everything that has been going on in the world. Sam's insights are always very much appreciated by our listening audience and by this program in general. This hour, we're joined by a gentleman who we've had on in the past. Haven't talked to him in a while, but with everything going on in Minnesota, a possible government shutdown looming this weekend, what's going to happen? Nobody knows. We're 1 year, a little over 1 year into the second Trump administration. Who better to turn to than one of the most entertaining and effective congressmen, in many people's opinion, ever to serve in Congress. He is legendary Representative Barney Frank. Representative Frank, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Let's just start right off the top here. This past weekend, 37-year-old Alex Pretty killed by ICE agents in Minnesota. When you saw the video, what did you think, and what has happened here?
Well, it's outrageous. It is very clear that in the rush to greatly increase the number of enforcement agents, Homeland Security and Border Patrol and ICE have been hiring people who aren't temperamentally fit or trained to do this. What we saw was murder. This man was putting up no effective resistance. He was shot while he was being held down in the back. And then we had the outrageous rush to judgment from, well, it wasn't even judgment. It was the automatic response of Donald Trump and his appointees that whatever any law enforcement agent does is right. And anybody who happens to be injured by a law enforcement agent must therefore automatically be a terrible person. So you've had Mr. Pretty, who by every testimony we've heard is a very likable, honest guy who likes to do good things, murdered and then slandered to justify his murder.
How does this happen in the United States of America? What has changed?
Donald Trump is a very clever man who figured out some years ago that the establishments in liberal democracies were making a big mistake by ignoring inequality. And I have a book coming out, published by Yale, that says that. And it was a terrible mistake, and Trump capitalized on that and convinced people not simply that they were doing badly in this new global economy, but that was a deliberate choice. He convinced people that the reason they were hurting economically was that a small number of wealthy people were getting their way and deliberately imposing hardship on other people. Ironically, of course, Donald Trump's policies, I just described Donald Trump's policies, but he's a very good demagogue, and he persuaded people that the system was rotten and that he was also a victim. So people have, until now, because I think things are really changing, accepted from him behavior that wouldn't have been acceptable from anybody else because he's convinced people that he was doing it for them. This latest set of incidents captured on camera, I think, breaks through that wall. I think that it's not surprising to me that he's firing Gobino and that he's got Republican members of the House and Senate worried, and you have a growing consensus. And Kristi Noem has no real idea what she's doing. Remember, the single stupidest thing, I mean this, literally, the single stupidest thing I've ever heard a high public official say was when Noem defined habeas corpus as the right for the president to send people out of the country. You could not come up with a more exact opposite answer to a question that's basic to her job. So what's happened is Trump has very cleverly identified with them to the point where they accept from him behavior that would otherwise be unacceptable.
Representative Frank, I want to come back to the Alex Pretty incident this past weekend. You called it murder. Now, a lot of people won't do that because they want to see an investigation. A lot of people feel these were ICE agents doing their job, people who support President Trump and support what ICE is doing. Why do you call it murder, and why do you think that so many people, even after the videos, still have an opposing viewpoint?
Well, I call it murder because I've seen the situation in which the man was being held down and was shot in the back by liberally when he was presenting no threat to anybody. He wasn't even trying to escape. Now, I realize, yes, there was a presumption of innocence for the agent, et cetera. Remember, that applies in court. That doesn't mean that you can't voice an opinion, especially when you've seen things. And, of course, opinions were also voiced very prematurely and now turns out totally erroneously by the White House apparatus, including the president himself. Now, why do people see it the other way? Because they are invested in believing that Donald Trump is all wise and knows exactly what he's doing. They have been persuaded that Trump means only to be helpful to them. No evidence appears to work against it. Look, this is a man who has changed the American tax code to make it more favorable to the very rich. And yet he is strongly supported, and has been up till now, by many of the people who are victimized by that. So it's... And the other thing, of course, is that the people who know better, who should know better, administration officials, Republican members of House and Senate, some of them are deterred from speaking the truth because of political retaliation. It's extraordinary. Donald Trump has a degree of control over the Republican Party that's unprecedented in American history. In 1936, Franklin Roosevelt won the biggest victory up till then in the presidential election. And a year later, he tried to defeat some Democratic conservatives in primaries who've been opposing his program. And he lost in almost every case. Trump, in contrast, is able to get people defeated. So what you have is a Republican Party where some people know better, but are afraid they will lose their seats. And I'm particularly troubled, frankly, by the way that some of the Republicans have expressed their disagreement by quitting. Senator Tillis from North Carolina, not a liberal by any means, has been very critical of the administration, but sadly he's quitting. And I think that's just an acknowledgement that Trump's hold on people because he's persuading them that he is their vengeance, as he said.
So strong. You know, a very interesting story this morning, Representative Frank. Minnesota Republican drops out of governor's race, citing GOP's handling of immigration enforcement. Republican Chris Madel said in a video posted on X that he cannot support the National Republicans' stated retribution on the citizens of our state. What do you make of this? Is this a bellwether that a gentleman who could have become the next governor of Minnesota is dropping out here because of what's going on in his state?
Well, I don't know Minnesota politics well enough to say whether he was a serious candidate or an underdog or whatever. But it is interesting that he felt that he had to drop out. You know, in some cases, you don't like what your party's doing, you fight to change it. So that is an acknowledgement, again, that the Republican primary voters, look, you can't leave the voters out of this. Yeah, the Republican members of the House and Senate have behaved very badly here in refusing to oppose this kind of violence. But they apparently believe that doing that is incompatible with saying, oh, I've been a Republican. On the other hand, it is the first time something like this has happened. A number of Republican members of the House and Senate and governors are speaking out. And in fact, the fact that he's dropping out also underlines another central point. The administration had been claiming that, you know, they're doing what the American people want. Well, the polls overall show people make a distinction between keeping people out of America who've never been here and have no legal right to come, which is widely supported, and I think the Biden administration made a mistake in being much too lax in trying to screen people or keep the numbers out. You cannot have a country where anybody who wants to move there can move there at any time. On the other hand, the public is not at all supportive of violent tactics or even nonviolent tactics that go after people who've been here for years, have done nothing illegal other than their way of entry. And that's true nationally. It's especially true in Minnesota. You know, Minnesota is not Berkeley, California, or Cambridge, Massachusetts. Yeah, there's Minneapolis, but there's also an agricultural element and a kind of a Scandinavian solidity traditionally. So when this reaction of a vigorous physical protest of an administration, law enforcement, reaches these proportions, that's very telling. And it's equally telling that this Republican candidate for governor, I think he's reflecting the fact that the Republicans are losing badly all across Minnesota. That is, the administration has managed to unite elements of Minnesota politically that, like in any other case, usually are against each other.
Whoopi Goldberg said yesterday on The View that this is an inflection point, and she's being quoted in a lot of places as saying this. Was the death of Alex Pretty in Minnesota, is this an inflection point in America? Are you there, Representative Frank? Hello. Representative Frank, can you hear me? Hold on 1 second here. I think we might have run into a technological difficulty. We will try to get Representative Frank back on the line there. We are talking with legendary House of Representatives member, Congressman Barney Frank. About everything that has been going on in the world the last few days. And it is really something when you look at what has been going on. So we are going to try to get Representative Frank back here momentarily. And again, we thank Sam Donaldson for joining us in hour number one. That was very interesting and very enjoyable for a lot of people out there in our listening audience, and we certainly appreciate Sam for coming on and participating in the program this morning. So we'll try to get Representative Frank back here momentarily and see exactly what happened there. But stay with us here on WGH Talk, and we will get this worked out. I promise. Let's see what we can do here. All right. Well, we'll get there one way or another. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, hopefully, with Barney Frank right after this short but important timeout. Don't go anywhere. This is WGH Talk.
1-800-222-1222. 1-800-222-1222. If you think it might be poison, then the first thing you do is call 1-800-222-1222. Poison can be anything you're not supposed to take. Antifreeze, pesticide, the wrong drug by mistake. If you breathed a nasty chemical, been bitten by a snake, call the Poison Control Center hotline. We're here for you night or day.
For a poison or drug emergency at home or at work, just call the Poison Control Center hotline. We're here 24/7 with the expert help you need, free and confidential. Even if you think it's a false alarm, call
1-800-222-1222. 1-800-222-1222. If you think it might be poison and you don't know what to do, call 1-800-222-1222.
Did you receive a call or message that mentioned Social Security and demanded immediate action? Did the caller know your Social Security number or other personal information and tell you that your Social Security number had been used in connection with the crime? Did you feel worried that your Social Security number might be suspended, your bank account might be frozen or seized, or you could be arrested? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, demand your personal information or instant payment, email or text you pictures or documents, or use a real government official's name to gain your trust. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card, prepaid debit card, internet currency, or by mailing cash. Criminals use these forms of payment because they are hard to trace. Do not be fooled. Hang up. Ignore them. Report this criminal activity to the Social Security Administration Office of the Inspector General at oig.ssa.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT. G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for greatest of all time, as in spaghetti sandwiches for dinner. They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on WGH Talk Radio. Representative Barney Frank is back with us on the line. We've regained telephonic communication, and I was asking Representative Frank if this is an inflection point in this country. Go ahead, Representative Frank.
Yeah, as I said, we don't know, but this is, could very well be, because it meets several criteria. First of all, it's an event of enormous importance. I mean, having federal law enforcement people shoot an American citizen who has done nothing wrong just is unthinkable. It used to be unthinkable. Unthinkable, certainly, that the administration in charge would say that was okay. Second, it's not a one-off, unfortunately. This is not the first time this has happened. It's the second shooting, fatal shooting, in a short period of time. But there's been a whole pattern of excessive violence. So that's another reason that people are, that it could have the impact of changing people's opinion. And I have a rule that I have found useful in politics. I kind of discovered it by experience. If you're in a tight situation politically, if you're in a situation where you cannot explain in any acceptable way what you've done. Don't try to fix that by saying something that no one will believe. I mean, there are times when people say things that, well, I understand you're feeling pressure, but nobody believes that. And this is where the administration finds itself in a position in which very few people believe what they say. Even their usual chorus of, oh, you did everything right, is showing some skepticism. And I would say an overwhelming percentage of the people who are not Trump cultists don't believe this argument that he's made. And for the first time, a significant number of people inside the cult band of influence are expressing doubts.
Mm. Greg Bovino, one of the top Border Patrol officials in Minnesota, apparently, as of this morning, is out of Minnesota. Holman, the border czar, will be put in. Is this a good sign? Is this going to take the notch, the notch down here on the heat?
Yes and no. Yes, it's a good sign. It's an acknowledgement that they have a political problem they have to deal with. It's also, apparently, Mr. Bovino, just temperamentally, watching him swagger and express his sort of contempt for people, that's not good law enforcement. And he made things worse rather than better by his whole approach and attitude. But whether it's going to bring things down, we don't know. You know, Mr. Holman is not the good fairy. He's not necessarily someone who is going to ease things up. So it's a hopeful sign, but we don't know enough yet to say it made a big difference.
Representative Frank, certainly want to turn to Congress here because the possible government shutdown is looming this weekend. And as of yesterday, 7 of the 8 Democrats who voted to reopen the government last year oppose the funding package if the Department of Homeland Security is included. What do you make of this, and where do you think we're headed as we go into the weekend?
I think this is unlike a lot of other shutdowns. Generally, in a shutdown, there's a lot of argument between the two parties who is more responsible. But I think a position that says we are not going to let ICE continue and the Border Patrol continue exactly as they've been doing and giving them more money and getting no improvements, that's unacceptable. And I do not think that they will get the votes to overcome Democratic opposition. And I think on this one, the Democrats will clearly have the winning hand politically. You wish that we weren't dealing politically with tragedies like this, but facts are facts. So yes, I think there will be a shutdown. And unless the Republicans find a way out. And I think it is a case where the issue in the shutdown is very understandable for the voter. It's whether there should be any restraint on this pattern of unchecked abuse by ICE. So, yeah, I think the Democrats feel unlike other areas. And by the way, I think it's now clear to a lot of Republicans that they would have been better off if they had given it to the Democrats and extended the health care subsidies, because they're running into a lot of anger from people who are going to have to pay so much more for health care. But the question of whether or not you put some controls on ICE and the shooting of innocent people, that's such a clear-cut issue that I think having a shutdown on that principle is a good idea.
What percentage would you give that we are going to have a government shutdown?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's not operational. Let me say this. The percentage is clearly within reach. So that's all you need to know.
Okay, so
in fact, I don't want people to be sure that we're going to win or we're going to lose. I think people should understand that given the nature of America, the way the Electoral College works, the money that will flow in to Trump and his designated successor, that it's uncertain who will win, but people should put their effort into it.
Well, Representative Frank, I think one of the big fears is that if we do go into a government shutdown, we just came off the longest government shutdown in the history of our country, over 40 days. If the Democrats are not willing to give in, which a lot of people feel they did last time, how's this one going to end, and is it going to go as long?
I don't know if it'll go as long. I think this will end with the Republicans giving in some. I think announcing, arguing that you're shutting the government down because you want to leave ICE to act exactly as it's been acting is not a tenable position. I think you will see the Republicans agree to some restrictions on ICE as a necessary means of keeping the government going.
The healthcare subsidies expired at the first of the year. That's mainly what the last shutdown was about. Did the Democrats get anywhere with healthcare?
Oh, I think the Republicans must be sorry that they won now. And I think having highlighted that was very useful. Now, it would be harder, though. The argument about the health care subsidy is not quite as clear cut. So that I think the Republicans now understand that they lost politically by getting rid of the subsidies. But it wasn't as clear cut beforehand, and it's not as clear cut as the issue about whether federal police officials should shoot unarmed citizens who are doing nothing illegal. I think the blatant nature of the abuse in that case makes this unlike any other shutdown, and I think it puts more pressure on the one side to give in, namely the Republicans, than you usually have.
I want to talk about Bill and Hillary Clinton, former President Clinton and Secretary of State Clinton. They did not show up for their subpoena in the House committee. Do you think they should face repercussions because of this? Nancy Pelosi apparently very unhappy that Democrats are...
I think they should answer subpoenas. Let's be very clear. The subpoena of Hillary Clinton is just outrageous. There's been no sign of any involvement between Hillary Clinton and the Epstein people. Bill Clinton, enough has come out, so he could testify. And I know that it's just you that you know an ex-president should never have to testify. Harry Truman refused to testify. Well, I didn't like it when the Supreme Court said that you couldn't bring any charges against the president while he was in office, and I don't like this either. So I think President Clinton definitely should comply. I think Hillary Clinton should comply, even though she did nothing to justify a subpoena, and she just show up and say that.
Are you surprised that Nancy Pelosi, who you know fairly well, is upset by this, that they should not have voted to hold them in contempt?
Am I surprised that Nancy is upset?
Yeah, that she apparently feels this shouldn't have happened.
No, I'm not surprised about to say. In the first place, I said, doing this with regard to Hillary Clinton is just out of nowhere. And there's nothing that suggests that Hillary Clinton had any knowledge or involvement with Epstein. It's clearly political. If I were... in Congress, I don't think I would vote for contempt, but I'm not surprised that Nancy Pelosi objects to these kind of tactics.
Are you surprised that we have gotten here, are people picking and choosing? That seems to be the Clinton's statement on this, that he'll testify when Trump testifies, when other people testify.
No, look, you get a subpoena, you can comply. That's it. Look, my experience when I was in Congress, people refusing to testify generated more bad publicity for them and damaged them more than if they testified. And I don't believe that Bill Clinton has done anything that is so heinous that if he has to admit it, it's going to seriously damage his reputation. And I think if they had any evidence that he had done anything like that, we'd already know about it. It would have been made clear. For Bill Clinton having testimony that he likes the company of attractive women, I think the number of people, let me say this, I find it off-putting that the TV news channels consider everything to be breaking news. But the fact that Bill Clinton was in a hot tub with an attractive woman, I don't think that's going to be breaking news anywhere.
Want to talk a little bit about Trump's first year. We just passed the first year mark. It's January 27th when we're doing this interview. How would you describe Trump second term, first year, and has it changed the country?
Yes, he's changed the country. He has significantly degraded it. His style of politics, his vindictiveness, his name calling, he has damaged democracy in a fundamental way. He has made this a much less functional country because of his vicious tactics. He has also, I think, done serious damage in the area of climate control. This is a man who is now actively promoting the worst and most polluting fuels over clean fuels. It's just gratuitous, this attack on wind. It's unimaginable. And he's also damaging the coal social structure. So I can't think of an area where I will give this. He finally got around to putting pressure on Netanyahu to get some progress with regard to Israel. And I think Netanyahu has been doing a terrible job taking a country that was one of the most popular in the world and now making it the target of anger almost everywhere. But yes, Trump did the right thing, but he did it about 5 months after Clinton would have done, after Biden and Harris would have done it. That is, among the people who voted, I think, unintelligently last time, there were people who wouldn't vote for Kamala Harris. They voted either for Trump or didn't vote at all because they thought the Democrats weren't doing enough to restrain Israel or promote climate change. And they now see that in both of those cases, the Democrats would have been very much better than the Republicans. And if Harris had won, I believe you would have seen effective pressure put on Netanyahu way before Trump did. And by the way, one thing that still isn't getting attention, and I have to say this as a Jew, I am ashamed of what's happening in the West Bank. I am ashamed that Jewish thugs living in the West Bank are persecuting unarmed, defenseless, peaceful Arab citizens on land they've lived in for a long time. I guess because so many more people were being killed in Gaza, it soaked up all the attention. But the Israeli government's tolerance of thuggery against Arab citizens of the West Bank is appalling.
If you were a congressperson running for office this time around, 2026, it seems as if the Democrats have the upper hand, but who knows as we get closer to November. How would you run? What would you run on?
Well, first of all, I would make the point that Trump has betrayed the basic promise to the voters, namely that he was going to make it more fair economically. And I think his tax policies have done that. I would also talk about climate change and how he has threatened the safety of people on the planet by repudiating climate change. And I would, at this point, object to his undermining of democracy, of his vindictive approach of prosecuting, even persecuting, people who are opposed to him. Finally, he's given us some new reasons in foreign policy. This obsession with Greenland and the willingness to undercut NATO, one of the great, most effective policies in the history of international politics, because that's our own NATO, is a terrible thing. And his announcement that we're going to run Venezuela, you know, if he was consistent on that, we wouldn't just be running Venezuela, we'd be running a lot of countries. But it's very clear, Trump doesn't mind leaders oppressing their opposition. He speaks fondly of the two men who oppress more people than any other in the world today, Xi Jinping in China and Putin in Russia. Now, when he says he can't allow Maduro to keep oppressing people, he doesn't want Iran oppressing people, I agree with that. But how then does he explain the kind words he has for the most dictatorial people like Putin and Xi Jinping?
You know, Representative Frank, this is what a lot of people have trouble with. And I think Bill O'Reilly wrote a book about this a couple years ago. Trump, he said Trump has no real ideology. He's not really a Republican. He goes for what's best for Trump. And that this whole incident in Minnesota with ICE is really an example of that. His press secretary is basically saying it's the Democrats' fault, it's the government in Minnesota's fault, that's what's really the problem here. But Trump is having good phone conversations with Governor Walz, and they are both putting this out on social media that this has happened, and obviously we know now that Bovino is out and Holman's in Minnesota. So it seems as if Trump is making some decisions here, yet the White House press room doesn't seem to understand that these changes are happening. Do you think Trump has any ideology, or are there people like Stephen Miller in the White House who just get to him and tell him what they want, and he thinks that will do best by him?
No, I think he has, in the first place, one difference between the two Trump administrations is that, in the first place, he made what for him turned out to be a mistake of appointing rational, thoughtful people to the administration, and then they broke with him. So this time around, there were no defense secretaries like Mattis or other level-headed people who were trying to restrain his bad impulses. He gets everything he wants, so I think everybody here. No, I don't think he's being misled by anybody. They're there because he wants them. They're there because they are explicitly in agreement with him on the worst excesses. I think this is, now, what's changing him is, because I don't think ideologically, he's very deeply rooted in anything. The one thing that reaches him is he's being told, and it's pretty clear that it's unpopular. So he doesn't have to run again, but he needs a Republican Congress to do a lot of things and to not do a lot of things for the next 3 years. And I think he's finally understood from the Republican members of the House and Senate that he's undercutting them, and he's the best weapon the Democrats have had in the political situation since the Great Depression. So I think that's what you see. Trump giving into political reality. And so far, though, the adjustments have been purely symbolic. Mm. We haven't seen any real policy changes yet.
We've got about 5 minutes left with Representative Barney Frank here this morning. It was kind of hard to hear you there, Representative Frank, if we could adjust that a little bit. What's going to happen in Minnesota? Where do you think this is headed?
Oh, I think you're going to see a substantial diminution of ICE activity. I think they're going to be cutting back this aggressive, searching people home. I think that ICE will become much more restrained and much less. I don't see going to see many more shots fired unless they are clearly in self-defense against armed people. I think Minnesota is going to be a lot like the Minnesota used to be before Trump came in and caused all that problems.
Where do you think the country is today? If somebody had to describe the United States of America,
speak a little louder. I'm sorry.
Yeah. If what? How would you describe the United States of America today?
Oh, badly torn, because a large number of people fell for Donald Trump's spiel. I understand why they did it. I understand that it was a mistake for Bill Clinton and Barack Obama to have ignored inequality brought about by globalization. I think it's a mistake for our most radical left to be pushing things like the Green New Deal and Medicare for All, going further in those areas where the public is supportive. As a result, we are very divided. I think going forward, we're going to do better because I think actually the repudiation of Trump's policy on deportation has come earlier than I thought as a major problem for him. I think he will increasingly lose his popularity even with those people who have been his base.
Do you see any rising stars in the Democratic Party?
Oh, yeah, I think there are several. You have Governor Newsom. You have Senator Chris Murphy of New York, of Connecticut, who has done very well and has a very good future. I think a number of our governors have done very well. Governor Cicero in Pennsylvania, for example. I think it's a pretty good field of people who are serving in the Senate and as governors. Mm.
Why have the Democrats not been able to turn things around in their party? What is the thing holding them back?
What, say again, please?
What's holding the Democrats back from becoming a popular party amidst all of these problems with Donald Trump?
Excuse me, can I ask you a question, sir?
Yes.
Have you ever tried to change the deeply held opinions of a lot of people? You know, it's not easy. The reason is, first of all, that the media has not been as cooperative as I would have hoped until recently. But it's as I said, there were deep mistakes. There's a book I'm coming out with that says, yeah, the left caused this problem by ignoring inequality and then by pushing a series of social changes that went beyond what's acceptable. And people have reacted. But the premise of, frankly, your question and a lot of the media is, well, why can't my kids just win? I mean, it's kind of like, I read a biography of Groucho Marx, and it said he was coach of a Hollywood softball team, and Jack Benny got up, and Groucho Marx said, hit a home run. And Jack Benny struck out. So Groucho Marx said, I'm quitting as coach. This team won't follow orders. I mean, just telling people, turn things around. How? What? And you have a lot of money and influence on the other side. I think the answer is, as I said, these grievances that a lot of voters had were deeply rooted, but I think they can be turned around if we alter our behavior.
Well, and my final question, and off of that, Representative Frank, is kind of to your point there. Most people feel that the media is liberal, that the media is for the Democrats. What do you say to people who make that claim, that the media is all liberal?
That they're wrong. The media is neither liberal nor conservative, but it has an effect of anti-conservative impact because it's anti-government. The problem is that good news is no news. And there is too much of people criticizing government, including some of the people on the left. So if all people hear about government is how badly it's performing, how corrupt it is, then they're not going to want to support. The only way to address the problems we've had, for instance, with inequality, is with active government. But unfortunately, what the media does is perpetuate this view that government is incompetent, that you can't look to government to help you, and a pernicious cycle, because people say, oh, government's incompetent, you can't count on them, so then the government doesn't have the ability to do things, and that makes them more angry.
Legendary Representative Barney Frank. Representative Frank, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and I hope you can come back real soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Enjoy it.
Bye-bye. Representative Barney Frank. All right, that wraps it up today. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Garrett, well, she wasn't real.